on field. Jump in there. If you are, I'll get out of the way. This is OTR.
I just turned the radio on, leaving the eye doctor, and I got to go to the post office, and then other than that, I'll be heading back to the barn.
Well, we got up real early for us, and we was over at Sam's in Spartanburg at 9 o'clock, and out of there by 9:30, or anyways, we back home at 10. Wasn't very many people there. Since then, we've been outside working on the chicken pen. We just come in, and I'm sitting here. Just got to sit down. My foot's killing me. The one with screws in it, because I had to be on a ladder a little bit. And having a cup of coffee and a piece of hummingbird cake.
All the hummingbirds you're doing that.
It's delicious. It's got pecans, maraschino cherries, pineapple, and what else? Bananas in it. And, it's a nice moist cake. And the icing that she makes is fit for a king. And we're going to look at the game camera that I got set up out back. And I'm seeing two little eyes and a long tail with rings on it in the dark. Hitting right at it.
Okay. I'm going through part of Simpsonville I've never been before. Didn't even know it was here. I do now. Gotta get over to Main Street so I can go to Malden. Well, that sounds like really good cake. Don't think I've ever had it before. Never heard of it. But I'm sure it's really, really yummy. And those pictures you sent the other day were interesting. Especially the one of the bear. I had to look a while to see exactly what that was, but it does look like it was a bear.
It's a cheap camera. I was in Walmart one time over on Pelham, and they were selling them out, Bill, and there were Tascos. Tasco made some good rifle scopes in the old days, cheap ones. And so I just picked them up, and I'm going to get a better one so I can take pictures of the birds out here that I feed. This morning and yesterday, we had about 12 blue jays at one time on the ground with probably 20, 25 doves. And then a bunch of little birds. But you don't usually see that many blue jays together. Oh, and there was a red bird mixed in there now and then.
That's a good collection of birds. When we lived in East Greenville, we had blue jays all over the place. And since we moved to Simpsonville, I really have not seen many blue jays, hardly any at all. Somewhere I read that they're almost endangered anymore. I don't know if that's true or not. But we feed a lot of birds. However, let me see here. Hold on just a minute. Over here where I have not been before. That's okay. I got plenty of time. But we don't see hardly any blue jays. They like sunflower seeds. We used to feed a lot of those to them. But lately, we have not seen many. We got so many cats, so I think that scares a lot of the birds away.
Yeah, I bet it does. Well, we just started viewing this SD card, and there was the raccoon. He went up and took the two squirrels laying on the log. And now it's showing on 12/17/2020 at 20:33, which will be 8:33. A fox is there, but he got there too late. Thank you.
Well, you know, of course, Lane feeds everybody in the world. And I guess I'm going the right, yeah. She feeds all these animals. She buys bulk cat food, puts back there. We have possums and raccoons, and then, you know, it tracks all kinds. We have foxes. We have foxes as well. Just all kinds of stuff. And then any bones or anything else like that we have left over, then she'll put them out there too. So they attract a lot of different animals. Let me give you a call back in just a second. N4AQ.
N0TR.
I'm Aiden this afternoon. N4DJC.
Oh, I was just talking to Bill. I was watching Life Below Zero Port Protection here. And they found a dead bald eagle, and I'm seeing what they said about it, because you can't even possess a claw or anything on those. I've never been around one, so I don't really know. But I did see one in the tree down here one day. Oh, we were sitting here looking at the game camera and talking to Bill. And the raccoons took the two squirrels, and then the fox come up. He didn't get anything. But the other day there was a bear, but I didn't get a real good picture of it. I got two pictures of it. But there were seven raccoons down there at one time the other day.
Grief, that's a bunch of raccoons. I've seen several of them over here. Possums and raccoons and deer, coyotes, foxes. I hadn't seen a bear here, though, but I did, get trees at, about a block from my mother's house, my late mother's house in Arlington, but a bear did get treed. I fell about a block from downtown.
Let's see if Bill jump in there. Well, there was, so far, and we're just up on picture number 44, and there's 500 pictures on there. They're up to three, but it seems like the longer they stay, the more. I never seen seven coons in my life, and I've been coon hunting a couple of times up in Kansas with the guys. But man, that's a lot of raccoons.
They're opportunists. They go wherever the food is.
And these squirrels that eat my coax, they were just sacrificing themselves down there laying on top of a log.
You sure it wasn't RG-22 that got them?
I think it was the element in the element of your chart, you know, the Papa Bravo lead.
But we've seen a lot of squirrels. I've had a bunch of squirrels since they cleared this lot a little bit. Haven't seen any ground squirrels much this fall at all, and the groundhogs are gone. We had two out here, and the neighbor got them out from under the shed, so they're gone right now. But I told him, I said, if you don't get that thing covered, and I said, get under that shed covered, I said, they'll be back.
Well, last year, at one time, we had two possums out here, one of them at 1 o'clock in the morning, and the other one at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I don't know what happened. They were eating my sunflower seeds, I think. Bill said blue jays like them. We had 12 blue jays out there this morning and yesterday. And they just come all at once, and then they're gone. And that one got a bullet right between the eyes, and the other one took out running down beside the chicken pen. That's where they was headed for, was the chicken pen. And I found it about 10 feet behind the chicken pen the next day. And then I got one other possum there. If they get too near the chicken pen, that's the kill zone. They're out of bounds.
Maybe see if Bill was going to jump back in. Yeah, they don't Hey, I tell you one thing, the possums, I usually don't bother them. They're nasty looking creatures, but they love pink copperheads, so I give them a pass since they don't hang around the yard very much. We got our neighbor's got a chicken coop with a couple of hens in it, I think, and they may spend more time over there. But I really hadn't, matter of fact, I don't think I've seen a possum here. I've been at least 6 or 8 months. I hadn't seen any blue jays yet this year, but did see them. Give me the ringneck doves. I think those things were domestic cage birds and they escaped because they're getting bigger than regular morning dove is.
We see a lot of them that way. They're fat as can be, and they're really dark colored. I never heard of domesticated doves, but we get both kinds out here. But I've seen as many as 30 or 40 doves on the ground at one time. They like them sunflower seeds too.
Ringneck is a bird that's like an escape birds that were caged like pets or something. I think I may be wrong. It may be another type of dove. But I used to see a lot of white winged doves down in Texas, but the ringneck ones are. I'm not sure if they're, you know, they're not native. I think, Tom, or at least they're not for this part of the country. But I just started seeing them maybe 5 or 6 years ago. Now I see them a good medium every year. I think they're about 10 or 15 on the ground over here earlier this week.
They just start falling out of the trees like rain. I used to hunt them a little bit when I was real young up in Kansas, and ate a lot of them, and I just feel like it's payback time now. And so those sunflower seeds, a 50-pound bag is, what, $25, I think. But I like to see them.
Keeping the mice away from that stuff is important, too, because some of the sunflower seeds just bring so many different types of birds. And I think the jays and some of the jays and some of those birds, they prefer that, fatback or suet mix. They prefer that in wintertime, I think. But cardinals do. I don't know if cardinals do it. I know jays love it, though. But we used to keep feeders out, and I mean bird feeders, too. We haven't done much of that recently, though. We had a fire ant problem for a while here, but I seem to have got it corrected the last several years. I got a guy that does a treatment 3 times a year. We ain't had a single fire ant in a mound or anything in the yard since he started treating it.
And those bird feeders are a pain in the butt, and so I just go out and scatter it real liberally on the ground. And that I take a pan of bird seed and a pan of sunflower seed and have one of those little aluminum scoops, and I scatter it real good, because some of those doves are real pushy, and I think it's a female. She'll land, and the male comes up behind her, and then he jumps at her, and then she goes 3 or 4 feet, and he goes over there. Like, you just don't want her to get time to stop and eat. Have notion to pick one of those off, but I don't. That would be against the law. That's a migratory bird. So I don't. But it really ticks me off. They're bullies. Used to be up in Kansas, I found that the blue jays were real pushy birds, but I don't see that down here. They land right amongst the doves and get along pretty good. Less than zero TR.
They don't seem to be quite as bad here as they are in other parts of the country. I don't think I've noticed the same thing. I know that some of the jay species are real aggressive, just like the magpies and crows are. Yeah, crows are aggressive here, too. Crows, they'll get anything. They don't care. They'll eat anything. They're like scavengers. And I can't stand crows anyway. I used to shoot them a lot back in years ago. Shoot them with a 22-250 or something like that. And just be nothing but a puff of feathers. But the doves, I mean, doves are kind of psychic. Sometimes we used to see a lot of them, and sometimes we didn't. Same thing when I hunted doves back in the 70s and 80s. Some years we'd have good flights, and other years we wouldn't see any hardly. But when they changed the baiting regulations or, you know, what you can leave on the ground for billet and that sort of thing. That kind of ruined some of the dove hunting, but people didn't really take that many of them anyway. I think about 70% of them die anyway, but the DNR guys, you know, sometimes they think they act like it's theirs instead of ours.
Well, Jerry, I used to love to hunt crows up in Kansas because it was so flat, and I never shoot at them unless they were at least 100 yards and preferably 150. And the longest one I ever got was 265 yards, and that was with a 22-250, a 53 grain hollow point match bullet. And I think it was 37 grains of 30-31, but I can't remember that long. It's been so long since I loaded for 22-250. That was my favorite cartridge, that and the 270.
I agree with you there. 270 has always been my favorite big game cartridge for deer. And basically, all I ever hunted was deer. But 22-250 was one of my favorites. I used to shoot the T-22. I give it to early on. I first got interested in rifles, but then I moved up to the 22-250. One of my good friends in Charlotte had a Remington 700 from a custom shop. It was not a real expensive rifle back in those days. It was a 700 custom shop. It had a, I don't know what kind of barrel they put on it, but it had a great 24-inch heavy barrel. And we used to shoot those, I don't know if you're familiar with the old Sierra, they called them Sierra Blitz bullets. They had like 40 grain or so. You couldn't drive them very fast. We call them blue screamers because they'd, if you drove them too fast, they'd just leave a paper trail to the target.
If you went over 3,500, they'd fragmentate. I know they had a 55 grain one that was super explosive, but I think I tried them one time, but I liked that 53 grain hollow point match from Hornaday, and guys back then it wasn't that much, you know, money when you loaded them yourselves. And well, I had a Model 70 Winchester with that heavy barrel, 24 inch, and I had a 15 power John and Ertl scope, a target scope with a 2-inch objective lens on it, and it was glass bedded. I had it glass bedded, and it had a 2-stage Kanzar trigger on it. And when you set that trigger and you put your finger in the trigger guard, there was a little tip on the leading edge of the target trigger, Jerry, and it was 2 ounces. So as you pulled back, when you touched that trigger, it was gone. You never even knew you touched it.
Okay, Jar. I've had one on a Remington 700, but I've had Seikos and had a couple of custom rifles. And I always liked the Remingtons. The Remington 700 actions were pretty easy to get working right, and you know they were easy to bed too, 'cause they were real popular. But the last 270 I had an Ultralight Arms 270. And it was really light. It didn't only weigh under 6 pounds scoped. But and it would shoot. But it was, you know, but it had some recoil to it as well. But I guess my favorite 270 I had a really old Ruger 77 I bought back in 70 or 71. And it was just a great shooter. Rugers normally didn't shoot very well for me, but this one did. And I enjoyed shooting that because I was left-handed, and left-hand rifles were just about impossible to find back in those days. But it had, you know, the Ruger 77 had the tank safety. And I enjoyed that rifle a good bit. But you're talking about your Ertl. I shoot 64 match rifle, 22 match rifle, had the target blocks on it, and had a Lyman super target spot on it with the spring, just like the old Ertl scopes were, and it was a 10 power. And I hunted squirrels with that thing, but you know the crosshair was really fine on it. Really set up for small bore shooting.
Great, Jerry. That's, well, we've had a lot of common things. And, yeah, the Model 700 Remington once, I had an ADL. I couldn't afford a BDL. And it, I had it glass bedded because it moved during the winter. And the stock would move on me. And so I had it free floated in glass barrel. And after that, it was a one hole shooter. It done half a mental angle at 100 yards pretty consistently. And the boss at my machine shop was a gunsmith, so that really helped out a lot. And he had a Ruger. It was a 6mm, which is 244, and I think it had a 1-12 twist. It was real light, but I'm telling you, that boss was a coyote-killing son of a gun. He could really shoot that thing.
Changed it from 244 to 6mm. That was a real popular cartridge here for deer. That, of course, in a 243, but the 6 is real popular in this area. After they changed the twist, you could shoot a little bit heavier bullet in it. I think they changed it to 1-10 or something like that. Might have been 1-9 later on to shoot that. That way you could shoot a standard, you know, 100 grain Spitzer instead of using that. You know, they had a, I think Remington loaded 105 grain bullet. It was almost like a round nose, so it would stabilize that slower twist at one time. They weren't real accurate, but the 6 with the faster twist was a really good rifle. I never owned one. I always wanted one, but I never owned a 6. I owned just about everything else in the book, too, over the years. But the 270 has always been a classic caliber for me. I always liked it. It was just enough, not too much.
That 6mm was a nice cartridge. My best shooting buddy, John Rocky, he's passed away now. He had 2 40XB Remingtons, and he'd buy a rifle just so he could perfect the loads on it. I mean, this guy shot 4 or 5 days a week, and we'd just go out to the strip pit dumps, and you could shoot up to 300 yards out there. And it was all open at that time, but it's been bought up since then. But they had a 27-inch stainless steel barrel. And you know, the best darn scope I ever shot that he owned was not that powerful, but like the Inerto with that 2-inch objective, you could see almost up to dark with that. But he had a Leopold, and it was called a 7.5 power tapered crosshair, and it tapered down to real thin in the center. And I shot a group, and we didn't have a bench rest there. I shot a group over the hood of his truck at 215 yards, and it was a half-inch group with that 22-250 of his. And then he had the 6mm, and the thing that made him the maddest was any loads he put in that dang thing, Jerry, they all shot good.
Rifles like that from time, those are keepers. You'll find rifles that shoot just about any load good. I know the I had a 270 700, and it was FS. It was a fiberglass stock. Basically, ADL, but it had a Remington, had a fiberglass stock on it. Came from a factory like that. It wasn't a KS. KS was a Kevlar stock mountain rifle. This was just an FS stock one. And that thing would shoot just about anything we put in it. You take the factory Sierra loads, 130 grain ballistic tips, 150 grain Osler's, and just about anything else, and it'd shoot them all, you know, well inside an inch at 100 yards. And that's pretty good for a 270. It wasn't a tack driver like some of them are, but it'd shoot just about any load really well. And it was a left-handed one, as a matter of fact. On top of that, and I think I had either a 2.5-8, or I don't think I had a 3-9. I had a 2.5-8 or something like that on it in Lupo. But that 7.5 power Lupo you're talking about, that was a real popular magnification, but they hadn't made those things in years.
Well, it scares me to death to look at the price of scopes. I just got Bushnell banners and stuff like that. I used to use Tascos a lot, but I had that one good scope. And I let my neighbor have it. He was a gunsmith and done me so many good things in his life that I sold him that rifle real cheap, Jerry. And anytime I wanted another rifle, I had to sell a rifle, period. And so I don't even have any big rifles anymore, Jerry. I got an 0383 Springfield that was sporterized that I got from my friend John Rocky that had those 40 XPs, and I traded him even up for a 788 Remington. It was a rear locking lug, and he wanted that. It was in 30-30, and I didn't even like 30-30s, but it was bolt action, rear locking lug. He wanted it bad, and so I've always kept that one. And did you ever hear of accelerators in 30-06, Jerry?
There's 55 grain had a little, like a Sabo in a 30-06 case, in a 55 grain bullet. If I remember correctly, I'm pretty sure that's what I'm thinking about. If I'm correct about that, I remember those. And I tell you what, those 788s were good shooters too. The 30-30 and a 788 wasn't bad. You know, you could load those Spencer bullets in it. It wasn't a bad cartridge. You know, loaded in a 788. Those things are pretty well known for having good accuracy, but the triggers weren't great in them, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, 100 grain clinker. It was a half jacket, and it was good. Well, we got to the end of these pictures. There was 536 raccoons. There was possums and foxes and deer. We enjoy seeing them. Yeah, John, he shot that. It was a good shooter. There was no question about it. And you're right, those were a little over 4,000 foot a second, and I tell somebody that I had a 30-06 shoot over 4,000 foot a second, and they think you're lying to them. It had a Sabot and 55 grain bullet in it, and I saved a few of those just for nostalgic purposes, and I can always prove that what I say is right. Shoot. It was a good old days. I never did zero those in, so I don't know where they shoot. But they'd have made a fine crow load, wouldn't they? And there wouldn't have been much recoil. I couldn't even stand to shoot a high-powered rifle now. I shot a 300 blackout the other day, a friend of mine had. And it's too much for me. I mean, my shoulder's been operated on, and I have so much arthritis, I just have no interest in them, Jerry.
Shooting my 22 rimfires, and my son's got an 03, a nice original 03 he picked up a few years ago. He paid a pretty good price for it, but it's really nice. He got a really, really nice 62 Winchester pup that he picked up, too. It is really, it's not meant for just near me. It's probably 98%. It's one of the nicest ones I've seen. It still has the hanging tags on it. I shoot revolvers more than I do anything. I've gotten away where I don't like guns with recoil anymore. I've liked shooting my 22s. When my left eye is in pretty good shape, I can shoot pretty well with my rifle. But I like shooting my 22 handgun, my revolvers. And a fairly heavy gun, there's no recoil at all. And I just enjoy getting out and shooting them, blinking with them. I haven't been out since the weather's been cold, but I've got one of the, I picked up one of those 10-shot S&W stainless 617s back last fall, and shoot 10 shots. I keep thinking, well, I always used to shoot 6, I said, when's the single? And it's going to run out, man.
I have a K-22, and I keep it locked, believe me, in about a 900-pound safe. It was my brother-in-law's, and it's, oh, man, it's just a beautiful gun.
Picked up, I think his is a 1946 K-22. It's got a good bit of holster wear on it. Man, those guns built back in those days before they numbered them, they were really slick.
A real old one. George had it, and he always carried it out on the farm out there. And when he passed away, it disappeared for I don't know how long. And I told Mike, I said, my nephew, I said, Mike, I said, that gun has to be there or else the neighbor across the street took it because he was a felon and we knew it. And he went down and helped when George had a heart attack and fell off of the four-wheeler. But it come up. He'd stuck it up in the closet up high and we didn't see it. And it was several years later, and we went back to Kansas to visit Bernice's sister before she passed away in a rest home. And Mike said, if anyone ever deserved that gun, he said, it's you, Tom. And we drove out to a neighbor's farm, and he had given it to him to keep for me. And I cherished that gun, I'll tell you. And It's just a six shot, I think, Jerry. On a, it's on a 38 frame, but that's a good old revolver. But I'm like you, I do about the same thing you do, and haven't got to do a lot of it because of the weather. But that's about all the recoil I want is a .22. You know, a friend of mine told me that. Not long ago, when you went to the gun shop, you had to wait in line and get in the door.
421, and they said they had about 100 in line when they opened up. When they opened up Saturday morning, they said it'll be worse today getting in. They don't restrict them getting in, but they all restrict the ammo. But people just buying up everything right now. They don't. Some of the people even buying guns. They can't find any ammo for us. It's crazy.
Find anything that goes bang. It's just crazy, and I don't get it. I didn't know it was still that bad. Which ones you work at, Dewey's?
He works at Grady here in Anderson.
Oh, I'm not familiar with that, but well, that's interesting to know. Good Lord, there'd be nothing on the shelves. And you know. Some of those people buying guns out there today don't make me feel warm and fuzzy about it.
Said they haven't really, you know, they have hadn't been really cautious about who they're selling to and that sort of thing. With all the, of course, the background checks and that sort of thing. But they can, you know, they got somebody that's a little shady or acts like it's going to be some type of shady transaction. They can turn them down. They don't have to. Just because they pass a background check doesn't mean that they get it, so they have to exercise a little caution because there are so many new people buying them now, and you know, it does give me a little shudder to know some people out there don't need to have a sharp stick, much less a firearm of some type, especially somebody that wasn't, you know, a lot of us were raised with them, but a lot of other people, they've never been around them before at all.
I know people that, one of them I worked with up at a printing shop in Missouri, and he said, I'm going to be the first one in line to get that concealed carry permit when they first come out with it, and it just made me shudder. This guy looked like Mark Twain and a hippie to boot. And anyways, one day a guy come to me and he says, Tom, he said, I know you're knowledgeable about this. And he says, oh, so-and-so's got a shotgun he wants to sell me, but you couldn't have him on the property. Well, he had an old Buick station wagon, which, you know, those are kind of rare. And now this has been, oh, guys, 10, 15 years ago. And so he said, if you come out in the parking lot with me after work, said he's going to show it to me, and I want to know if it's any good. And so I went out there with him, and he lifted up a piece of carpeting, and underneath of it, it looked like an armory underneath there. And I'm not sure if this guy had an FFL or not. I don't think he did. I don't know who gave him one. But at any rate, he handed me that shotgun, and the very first thing I did was clear the breech, and I think it was 20 gauge. And when I cranked that pump gun back, Jerry, a shell went flying out of it. Can you imagine that, driving that with that gun pointed towards your back, and a shell in the chamber, and there was more in the magazine.
And better one than that. But it's not, it's something fairly recent, but there was a person, it's a shop here, but there's a person in another shop that brought in a Remington shotgun. It's been a number of years ago. Now, I know they started putting choke tubes in them about, I guess 30 years ago or so. And, they screw in chokes. And this person had put the choke tube in a chamber somehow or another, because that's where they thought the choke tube went. But I'm telling you what, now, I had to help the guy. The owner, they had taken apart. I said, there's not a, just a 12 inch. I said, let's make sure there's not something else in there before we start fooling around with it. So, since it's 1100, I just pulled the breech back on and unscrewed the magazine, flint piece of the magazine tube there, and pulled the barrel off. I said, let's see what all's in there before we start jamming it. And we got the choke tube out, but there was also a 20-gauge shell wedge in there as well. And if that guy put a 20 or 12-gauge shell in behind that 20, he wouldn't have been around to bring it back. I asked him. I said, this has been since they changed from. Where 20-gauge shells were yellow instead of all of red and red like 12-gauge shells. And I said, did you not realize that this was a 12-gauge? He said, it looked like it was the right size. And I said, Lord have mercy. I said, this guy must have somebody looking over his shoulder, because I said, if he didn't, he said he'd be dead or blinded or whatever.
That's a good one. Shoot, Jerry. I can't imagine that. They're all yellow now, the 20-gauge. But, I got a picture of a pistol. And there was a fella at the machine shop I worked in. His name was Arkansas John. And when he'd laugh, you could hear him for 150, 200 feet down the machine shop. He had such a peculiar laugh. And but he was a good machinist, but he acted like something they drug out of the hills now, I'm telling you. But he was smart when it come to machining, and he was smart when it come to ballistics. So one day, he always tried to drive things to the max. I always tried to stay about one or two grains under the max. And like with the 22-250, I'd stay two grains under and get a lot better accuracy. And rather than the speed. And so John went out, and luckily he went by himself that day, and he had a Ruger, a Super Black Hawk, and 44 Magnum. And he had coated the bullets with Teflon. And so he wanted to see how that worked out. And I don't know if he used lube or not, but he used Teflon for sure. It just so happened. Now, before he went out, he had a few brewskis, shall we say. So he was drunk, and we would never, ever go around him if he was drinking or anything. But as a general rule, he was the nicest guy in the world. And he goes out there by himself out to the dumps where we shoot at. And he shot about three rounds through that, he said. And the next one, instead of, like if you was listening, it'd be boom, boom, pop. Well, you know what that means. And he went ahead and shot the next round. And he had failed to put powder in that round, and it had a primer. And the primer was strong enough. Now, imagine he's using Magnum primers. And it drove the bullet, a 240-grain bullet, past the forcing cone. And then he shot the next shot. And, Jerry, I got a picture of that pistol. And it just fragmentated, it just blew several cylinders out of the side of the cylinder. And I got it sitting right over my loading bins there, and it says, terror is human. But not in this case. Oh, man. Now, you wouldn't believe what that Super Blackhawk looks like.
suspicious of when people double charge bullseye in them before, and they just don't hold up very well. I've only had one. I was shooting a Smith & Wesson Model 25, which was the one I had was a 45 ACP. I mean, I was loading the auto rim, which is a rim version of 45 ACP. Shooting it in. As a matter of fact, I was shooting over Clemson with a guy that I think he's retired from the State Patrol now, but he and I used to go up there and shoot a lot. He was a big target shooter, and I was shooting that 45 revolver. And I think they were about 210 grain or something like that. These were full wide cutters. Since it was going in a revolver, they were designed for the auto rim. And evidently, I put a squib load in one of them. And it went boom, boom. When I heard that thing go poof like that, I stopped what I was doing. And I always carried a hardwood wooden dowel with me in case one did get stuck. And luckily, I caught it before I tried to fire the next round. And drove that lead, thankfully it was a lead bullet too, loop lead bullet, it drove out pretty easily. But man, I tell you, I was lucky. It didn't bulge the barrel since nothing went in behind it. Man, that thing would have really come apart.
Yes, and I think that's happened to all of us at one time in our life. And I had a box of shells one time, and I knew I'd done that. And when I come up on it, and I always, since then, have carried a wooden dowel in my bag. But, what John did, and that's the reason I stay away from bullseye, I use unique. And if you could double charge, and that Dillon's almost impossible, but if you could double charge, it just runs out on the floor. So you know it real, real fast. But because it fills probably 80% of the case or 90, and that's what you really want for a linear burn. But he just put a primer in, and he didn't put any powder in it, and he went ahead and fired the next shot. And luckily, nobody went with him because he'd been drinking, and he didn't get hurt. Even the top strap on the revolver was bent. And I had some guy tell me, oh, yeah, I done that once. And I shot four shots, and they stuck in the barrel. And the next one, when it went off, it didn't do anything to it. Those Rugers are built real strong. You know, there's always one in the crowd. And they just dream up some of the biggest lies. I had a guy, he come up to me at that printing place, and he said, well, I got a buddy, he's got an elephant gun. And I said, oh, yeah? I said, 458 or, you know, or 375 or maybe a 460 Weatherby or something. No, it's a 3040 Craig. How would you have answered that, Jerry?
Might have killed one. somebody put it on the forward, maybe. I had a Ruger number 3 in 3040 Craig once, and it was a pretty good shooter. But that's probably a little bit out of class for an elephant gun.
Yeah, he's right in there with a 30-30. I don't know. Maybe if you had a Gatling gun with them loaded up in there, you might have stopped an elephant. I highly doubt that, though.
They always said Bell. I mean, I shot him with two. Was a 275 Ruby, which is just a 7x57. But he shot a lot of elephants too. There, but he was able to get close to him. I don't think you can do that anymore if you can even shoot him. But I've never shot a 458 or a 460 either one. I've shot 375s, and I shot a lot of 45-70s in lever actions and in single shots over the years too. But see, when it gets past a fairly heavily loaded 45-70, that's about all I could take when I was a young guy. Now, and if you handed it to me, I'd just sit it on the ground. I wouldn't ever attempt to shoot it.
VWA and KV4 VWA, Steve's got one of those, but they got a trajectory like throwing a brick, and most of the loads are either 350 or 500 grains. And it certainly isn't an elephant gun by any means. It just don't have the foot pounds. I think that 460 Weather is 8,000 foot pounds, and with respect to that, as a comparison, the 270 is about 2,700 foot pounds at the muzzle.
The 30-06 is about my limit. Was my limit. I shot the 330 Dakotas and that sort of thing. That's I shot a 330 Dakota. One of my friends had. It was a really nice rifle, and it was, you know, it was built up in South Dakota, the Allens. I can't remember his first name, Norman. I can't remember his husband's name. He'd been an airline pilot for years. They started the company up back in the early 80s or mid 80s, I guess. They built a beautiful rifle, Dakota 76, but this was a 330, and it shoot a 250 grain dial for around 3,100 feet per second. But man, I tell you one thing, that thing would shoot five shots inside an inch if you could stand it. Stand shooting more than five times.
I had a friend up there in Kansas, and he had a 50 caliber built in Arizona. And back then, you could buy the loaded shells for 99 cents. Now they're, last time I looked was probably 10 years ago. And there comes a prime truck, Bernie, and they were about $8 a round, and it weighed 21 or 23 pounds. And I had the opportunity to shoot it one day. I told him no, and another big old fella there shot it. And it go through they had some old train cars out there that weren't used anymore. Somebody coming up the driveway, and it would shoot right on through them just like it was nothing. And he would take AR plate and it shoot through a 1 inch or 1.5 inch AR plate. Better shut that off. From the machine shop, we had drop-off pieces, and they'd shoot right on through that AR plate. He shot a 750-grain bolt-tail bullet with 237.5 grains of 4831, Jerry.
They used to shoot with, had a 50 BMG bolt, and it had a muzzle brake. It looked like one that might come on an M1 Abrams. And I videotaped him. Probably just before we had iPhones, I videotaped him shooting. And that muzzle brake was, I mean, it was just, I had a canned drink sitting like a Coke or something sitting beside me. And it was full. And the muzzle bass was so bad. And I was 10 feet away. The muzzle bass was so far, so bad, 10 feet away from me. It blew the Coke completely off the shooting benches. And I was probably at least 10 feet away. I didn't want any part of it. He shipped it for a while, but it was one of these, I can't remember the manufacturer, but it wasn't anything like the Mellon 50s or anything like that. It wasn't really, you know, really nice gun. But he said, it's about like a 20-gauge shotgun. I said, I don't care. I said, I'm not trying to. I said, when you start loading something that looks like a small Coke into a bolt action rifle, I said, I don't think I'll try it.
So this one was so heavy. I guess the recoil wasn't that bad. These new Barretts and stuff like that are different breed, and they have systems in them to limit the recoil. But there's so many out there now that are as good or better. That 338 Lapua and different ones that the military uses. But 237.5 grains of 4831. I think in a 270 used about 58 grains. So I don't want no part of that thing either, Jerry. Well, I got to go, Jerry. Prime's been here and the mail's been here. I got to go outside. But it's been fun reminiscing. And we did a lot of things like that back in our childhood that we can't do anymore. But it was fun. And but you know, when somebody comes up and tells you something like that you shot a 30-40 Craig and it was an elephant gun, you just have to bite your tongue. He she got mad at me when I told. I took in a Hornaday loading book the next day and showed it to him, and I showed him the comparison. And boy, he got mad. He didn't like that at all. But with that big old huge action they had, I guess it looked like an elephant gun. Anyways, I've shot one, but it's been when I was a teenager. See you later, Jerry. You take care, my friend, and great talking to you today and reminiscing about the old days. This is Enduro TR, clear on your final 73.
After Dave, enjoy talking with you as usual. You take care of yourself, and hopefully the weather's a little warmer. I ain't been outside yet. I got to go check the mail, too. Maybe somebody sent me a big check instead of a bill. Talk to you later. N4DJC, clear.
When you get our age, Jerry, it's either pills or bills. Zero TR.